You're listening to KFSK Public Radio in Petersburg. It's time now for January edition of Campus Connection. I'm your host, Angela Denning, and I'm joined here in the studio by Superintendent Erica Klutpainter.
Hello.
Yeah, it'll probably squeak, but that's okay.
I'm always moving it and feeling like it's sounding okay. So loud, but there we go.
And we'll be joined by School Board President Sarah Holmgreen. Yes. Probably pretty soon here. Mm-hmm. So let's go over tonight's agenda. And just a reminder before we start, this is a meeting that's going to be in person at the library at the middle and high school, but it's also on Ring Central video conferencing. KFSK will not be airing the meeting because we're airing an assembly meeting happening at the same time. So if folks want to listen to the meeting tonight, they can do that by logging into Ring Central.
Yep. Absolutely.
And of course, KFSK will post we'll post a recording of the meeting later on so people can listen if they're not listening live.
Absolutely.
Compared to the last regular meeting, this is quite an agenda. You know, that last one was before the holiday break and some people were out of town, and now there's quite a bit to vote on with the school board. I have some questions for Sarah when she gets here, but to start with you, there was a work session last week. Mm-hmm. It was like, I don't know, 2 hours and 40 minutes or something like that, yes. Where the school board talked about reviewing the mitigation plans that the district has in place. And you indicated there that it sounds like there's some parts of the plan that the school board will vote on, but you were pretty certain that there were a few things that really will change, namely testing and tracking.
Yes. So some of that has come out, and I think you guys have reported a little bit on it here as well, but things are changing fast and furious. The guidance kind of came out on December 27th, then there were updates to that for schools in early January. Then there's the work session. Then there's these changes and announcements that start coming out about what public health is and isn't going to be doing with regard to contact tracing efforts and tracking because of the fast and high transmissibility of the Omicron variant, which is where we are right now. And I think we talked about that a little bit during the work session that, you know, even between December 14th meeting and January, you know, I think as with everything with COVID, it seems like we are going down a road and it seems like this is the next step and the next part of the path. And then boom, you know, something else kind of hits us from the side. And that's what it feels like again. And I know that's frustrating. It's frustrating for us as well. We, as I said during the work session, didn't ask for Omicron variant to rear its head here, but it's here. And it does seem to be hitting communities very fast and furious, kind of blowing through and cases seem to be exploding. That's the stressful part. The other part of it does seem, you know, that talking with our medical staff and state medical staff last week, it does seem to kind of really peak quickly and then kind of drop off. And so that is what we are seeing within school settings around Southeast in particular and other places. So I guess there's the bad and the good, you know, about that. It seems fast and furious and stressful, but it does seem to be kind of declining quicker. So I guess we'll see, you know, where that goes.
I guess a stressor for you would be staffing.
Yes.
I mean, if, you know, we've heard that it's highly transmissible 3 to 4 times what Delta was, but perhaps less severe when you get it. Mm-hmm. But it almost doesn't matter because if a staff person gets it, they're out.
Yes. Right? And those are also changes that have come with the CDC guidance that's been put out as far as they've adjusted the quarantine and isolation periods. They've reduced them from 10 to 5 because it is sort of this fast explosive. And they're finding that if people test positive, it appears that the majority of the transmissibility is within that first 5 to 6 days. Reduces then to about 30% and then down to about 15. So at this point, you know, it would appear that we would be following that guidance. And we have been just this last week or so. If somebody is positive, that they do go home, that we are counting day zero as the date that they took the test. And then we're, you know, requiring that isolation for 5 days after and returning on day 6. It does say in the CDC guidance that you can look at the symptoms and then kind of go from there. We do not feel qualified to be doing that in school. And if public health is not going to really be overseeing the cases, I think we have to just go from the date of the test. And it is a shorter isolation period than it was. It's not 10 more days. It's 5 and then 5 days masking. So we can get people back in the building sooner, theoretically, which is a good thing. And then also along those lines would be to really be kind of working on our testing and pushing that back out to families rather than us trying to manage all of it, travel testing and everything else, and pushing that back out to families. And I think that will also be a help. We just, I mean, as public health is saying, they're trying to get back to the business of public health in addition to COVID. And we're also trying to get back to the business of education in addition to COVID tracking and, you know, all the work that has gone into that. So those are some of the changes.
How I have a couple questions about that. How would you manage if, let's say, students or staff, they're positive, they come back day 6, but they're supposed to mask.
Mm-hmm.
If masking is optional or something like that, how do you follow that?
That will be challenging. So I will say, and as you probably already know, and I think I've reported, and we discussed it last week during the work session, the recommendation is still for K-12 universal masking. And that is what I've told the board last week, and I'm still there. We'll see, you know, where that goes. They also wanted some information about what a masking on the move model could look like in the elementary school. There seemed to be that seemed to be an area that they might want to consider. It didn't seem like they were as interested in talking about that 6 through 12, just because there's so much mixing and so many opportunities for activities and travel, you know, to be disrupted. So I did research some things about that, and I will be talking to the board about that tonight too. Some recommendations that I would have if they did move, you know, to a masking on the move model in the elementary. I think you would have to have, if there was a positive case in a classroom, I think you would have to have 10 days of masking, no questions asked, in that classroom. That would help offset that. If a student went home for the 5 days and then came back for the 5 days, then everybody's just masking in the classroom. That would help with management. I mean, as we know, there's guidance and there's recommendations, and then there's what the reality is in a classroom, in a school setting. And sometimes I think when people want a number, I know that was discussed a lot, you know, we want an indicator.
Threshold.
Yeah. Give us, you know, 0 to 5 cases, boom. Unfortunately, in a school setting, that is operationally very, very challenging because you could have 5 cases on a Monday and you say, okay, Tuesday, we're optionally masking. And then, especially with Omicron, 6 more cases are going to come in overnight. So operationally, you know, the yo-yo effect is kind of what it's been called in other districts. It would be a nightmare, I think, to manage. Kids wouldn't know what's going on. You know, staff wouldn't. So it sounds great. The theory of that sounds really great. And I also would love to just have a number and stop having to debate and discuss, you know, about it as well. A number would be great. Like, nope, this is the number. With Omicron, it's an arbitrary number at this point. So I don't have a good recommendation. I've been bugging everybody at the state level and around the region and locally as well. Everybody's struggling with that, you know, just because of the transmissibility of Omicron.
So you mentioned, you know, putting testing and kind of their household tracking to families so that it's not on the shoulders of the office staff and teachers and whatnot. How would the parents and families communicate with the school district with their results? Is that something we don't know yet? Or
Well, at this point, we would be modeling it similar to what they've been doing in Juneau with their test to stay model, where they send the tests home and parents are notified your child was in a classroom or, you know, possibly exposed to, you know, a positive student. We are letting you know that, you know, tests are available to you. We can send them home with your child. You can come pick them up. However, you know, whatever the best protocol is for that. And we are working on some simple language. I mean, some simple, you know, flyers, whatever you want to call them, things that'll go home. That'll just be like, this is what you need to do. You know, here it is. Juneau does not require daily check-ins related to their testing. We initially were hoping that we could do that. But again, it's the management of it. And if we're saying that we're managing it, but we're really not, or if we're, you know, if we can't really, we don't have the manpower to do it, then I think we just have to be honest about that and say, we cannot track every one of these. We are sending them home to you, and you are signing off as a parent or guardian saying, I understand what's expected of me. I'm going to test my child every day for at least 5 days. And if I have a positive, I'm going to let you know. And that'll be the protocol that we'll be discussing or pursuing. That's what I'm recommending.
Yeah. I wondered just testing my own daughter and sending in via emails the results after travel or something. And I think I'm just imagining the inbox.
Yes.
And it would be easy to miss an email.
Yes, exactly.
That here's the travel results or that kind of thing. Because I know Miss Penny has probably a lot on her plate, at the middle school, and all the offices are doing a lot of different things besides keeping track of the kids' results.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So it's a big task, and we realized that this last fall, in addition to everything else that we were doing, was, especially when we had that large outbreak, around Thanksgiving. That's all we were all doing. That's all the office staff was doing, the principals, me, Jamie, all of us. And we just, when people are sending letters or commenting on, the frustration around so much emphasis on COVID and not on education, we completely agree. So I'm in total and complete agreement with people when they're talking about that. We need to put the mitigations where they are, do the best we can to follow them, hold people accountable, families and their involvement as well. And then, yes, we also want to move forward with, focusing on teaching and learning and activities and all the other things that go along with it, as we move forward. So
yeah, that's an interesting idea for the grade school. I would think the fact that they have all these kids in the same classroom all the time every day, it would be easier to manage.
Yes.
Following up, if a student were to come back on day 6 after having COVID, mm-hmm. and then having the whole class mask.
Yeah.
Versus the secondary schools where they are moving around all the time.
Exactly. I don't have a clear recommendation for how to do that, because I think what we're hearing from our medical advisors locally and at the state level is, it's one thing to talk about a pod of kids potentially in a classroom setting, but if you have any sort of cases in a school, most places are not recommending just to ignore that. That you would want to do something, some sort of response to that. So whether it's increasing masking or doing whatever you're doing, but that yo-yo effect, and then really kids are so overlapping, high school classes are, middle school too, once you've all gone to band together, or everybody's in the gym, or I don't see a clear, easy path for that. And I do think that there's a lot of will at the secondary level among kids too, families and kids and teachers. There's so many activities that kids are involved with that I just think people are really reluctant. Many people are reluctant to kind of lose any of those things that might, be impacted by decreasing masking, and it's easier for them to do it. It just is. They may not like it, but they can do it. And so far, knock on wood, we're our kids are still doing things. We've got cheerleading going, we've got basketball teams going, we're getting our pep band up and running. There's focus on getting to regionals, getting middle school wrestling going. There's a lot of stuff going on. Native Youth Olympics, all those things become, Palmer right now, their hockey team is, 10 out of 14 are positive right now. So, it just immediately you're kind of done. Craig has had disruption. Haynes has, Wrangell. We had a couple teams that didn't come this weekend.
Activities Director Jamie Cabral talked about that at the work session last week, just how, for example, gymnasium and masking, even though there's not a mandate in town, and if the school district changed the masking policy, you'd still need to mask at events like in the gymnasium watching sports, because he said teams would not come. Some teams simply would not come if that's not the policy.
Right, exactly. And I will say this last weekend was great. We kind of put that out there, people. And again, not to be, rude or disrespectful, but just saying to people, the option is we are allowing other people to come into the gym now. We're not just keeping it at this point. You know, we're trying to allow people to come into the gym and come cheer on the kids and do those things. And we don't want to have limits on those either, but we, you know, we are requiring masking, you know, within the gym setting and for all the spectators. And I would say, you know, people were great this weekend. You know, I mean, there's a few reminders here and there and we did that, but, people were good and it looked like a basketball game weekend, you know, kids were cheering, people were yelling. There was a fabulous 3-point shot on the buzzer for Joseph Tagon, which was amazing. And anyway, I mean, it just felt like a, you know, felt like a normal weekend. I mean, it, you know, that's the kind of thing that I just think we have to keep our eye on, that, you know, in the midst of all this, we want to keep those things, you know, rolling the best that we can. And if it means leaving a mask on while you're in there doing it, then let's do it. Come cheer the kids on and do it, you know, so.
This next question isn't really on the agenda for tonight's meeting, but maybe it has something to do with COVID, which is the substitute teacher situation at the district. Mm-hmm. We've had some announcements sent over to KFSK regarding a shortage of substitutes in certain situations, looking to fill staff who has planned leave for whatever reason, and then trying to find substitutes to fill those.
Yeah.
There's ideas that maybe there won't, you know, mm-hmm. there we can't have PE. Well, finally, you got a substitute that came yes. forward at the last minute. But mm-hmm. I mean, that was a threat, that kind of thing, or having offices closed or that.
Yes.
That kind of thing. Is that, I mean, do you see that as like a COVID thing or what's the situation like?
You know, I think it could be a lot of factors. I think it's probably just like anything else, you know, looking at the job economy issues around, you know, locally, statewide, nationally, internationally, really. I think, you know, there's been a lot of things that have been brought to light, I think, during COVID, whether good, bad, or ugly, things have come out. I think that, again, it's both ways. We have some people who have said, you know, I will not come in and sub if we don't have, you know, 100% masking, or I'm reluctant to come in because even with masking, the Omicron variant is so transmissible. I don't want to end up getting it, even though I'm vaccinated. I don't want to miss a trip, you know, which we understand. I mean, I get it. It can mess up your travel or you just get sick, and we don't want anybody to get sick either, especially people coming in and, you know, trying to help us keep going. So I think there's some of that. I think there is still sort of a shortage. You know, we still have openings for aid positions that we've had all year. And we're more fortunate than many districts. We do have a really good retired teacher sub pool, and they've been amazing. But we have some maternity leaves coming up, and so we've taken a couple teachers, you know, a couple of our regular subs are out of the mix. You know, some people are traveling, and we just, it's a lean pool. So, yeah, it's really a problem. And that's what we're going to start doing. If we have permission from teachers or staff members, that's how we're doing it. If they're okay with us, you know, saying I've got an upcoming medical, you know, procedure, I'm going to be out for 5 days, and we say, okay, are you comfortable with us putting that out there, saying we, you know, we're looking for a substitute for kindergarten, you know, for these dates, and just knowing that we're willing to work with people on that to help train people and help people do that, and even just come up and do some shadowing, check us out, come talk to us about it. If you've ever even thought about it, don't just shut the door. You know, we.
Yeah, whatever. I mean, so with 8 positions, we're hi, Sarah.
Hi.
Sarah Holmgren.
Sorry.
Okay, president of the school board. She made it. We're talking about the, you know, substitute teacher situation and how there's 8 positions that are open at the school district, and what's required for that position, you know, for listeners out there who mm-hmm. might be looking for work. What do you need?
What we've held to over the years is and there are different rates of pay for teacher subs. If you have a teaching certificate, it's a different rate of pay, $140 a day. And if you're a non-certified teacher sub, it's $100 a day. And typically what we've required is people to have at least a bachelor's degree if they're going to come in, and especially when we're looking at specific positions that might have a higher content load, you know, depending on, you know, subbing for a calculus teacher, for example, or, you know, or honestly, subbing for kindergarten. We have a lot of people that are not comfortable thinking about kindergarten, you know, so just because of the management of little bodies and what that looks like. So If people are out there and interested, or they've had other sorts of training and job experience that might help them be suitable for something like this, we are willing to have those conversations with people. So if somebody's out there listening and they've thought, you know, I've used to run camps every summer, or I have experience doing this with kids, you know, and I would be willing to go through the process and interview and talk about that, we would be willing to talk with people about that. So if they're interested, they should give us a call.
Okay. $100 a day or 140.
Yeah.
If you have a teaching certificate.
Yeah.
Anything you want to add, Sarah?
It's not a full 8 hours. So
that's true. Not a full 8 hours. Yeah, I didn't think about that.
That's true.
And the fact that it's flexible. So if you're not looking for a steady employment, or it's, to me, in some ways, a toe dip into the school district.
Yeah.
You know, we do have openings. So is it something that I might want to work for, might want to work for the district? Well, maybe start out as a sub and see if you like the culture and the environment and, you know, that kind of a thing.
Well, we so far, Sarah, we've pretty much talked about mitigation.
Fun.
Mitigation plan.
That's dripping with sarcasm.
Before we jump subjects, do you have anything to add? Do you think that the board is resolved to make changes tonight?
You know what? I don't want to guess. I think, you know, our discussion was limited to the board work session. So we've all had time to think about things, talk to different people, get feedback from the community, although I think I don't think I personally have changed my view on it from September, because I lean on the medical field more than personal opinion the decisions that would be made, because I'm making it not only for my own two children and grandson that are in the district, but I'm making it for other children that I don't know their health background. And that's where I'm coming from. So I don't anticipate me being swayed differently than how I voted in September. But to be honest, I don't know about some of my other, actually the rest of my board members. I don't. And that's the beauty of having five people on a board. And if for whatever reason they choose differently, then that's what I'll support, whatever ends up happening.
Okay. All right. Now, because of recent weather, there's a couple in-service days that are changing. So there were, let's see, I wrote it down, I believe. Was it February and April?
Yes.
A couple days changing. Mm-hmm. So on the agenda tonight is changing the school calendar. Mm-hmm. So students will be in school a couple days that they weren't, or they weren't going to, because you're making up the weather days.
Yes. And there is a difference between canceled school, sort of quote unquote snow days, versus a remote or a virtual day. Those remote days do still count as days of instruction, as long as there is instruction, or there's been, you know, packets have been given, or whatever the level, you know, is. So, but having those days actually be canceled right after break, that when the 4th and 5th of January, due to the snow issues and all of that, we need to make those up. So rather than extending further into the year, that seemed to be the most logical, or, you know, going further into June or whatever, that seemed to be the most logical. And that's what the principals felt as well. And so, yeah.
Okay. I think most people in the community would appreciate that instead of going into June.
Yeah.
Further into June. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That makes sense. And then speaking of the snow days or the weather days, any damage to the buildings from that heavy snow load that hit all, I mean,
boy, it sure did.
A lot of
the whole community. And yes, absolutely. So first, I do just want to recognize the efforts of our maintenance and facility director, Aaron Buller. He's been incredible during all of this. You know, I think initially there was a few comments made, you know, well, why wasn't everybody ready for this thing? And once the reality of what was going on really in the community overall, it's not that simple. And this is a huge campus with a lot of flat roofs, unfortunately, in Southeast Alaska. And we have a very limited crew. We have, one maintenance director. We don't have a maintenance assistant at this point. We're actually hiring for that. And we have three or four custodians. So that's our crew. So, so I do want to recognize Aaron's efforts. Also, Kevin Hagen, who's been a contractor that's been working with us and has a lot of experience doing this kind of work, because we are, in fact, today, I've been meeting with the insurance investigator and the,
Adjuster.
The adjuster is coming this afternoon. In fact, when I go back over, he'll be here. So taking lots of pictures and all those things. The new, which is now 10 years old or so, roof at the elementary, 10 or 12 years, held up pretty darn well. Over there, there were no leaks. There's of course a few cracks here and there in some ceiling tiles and things like that. But overall, the roof did its job. So that newer roof, great. And of course, that building is a little easier to manage because it's sort of like a big long trailer house. You just kind of clean it off, you know. Secondary buildings, that roof project, as you know, is at the top of our capital list over here at the middle and high school, and it's also on the borough's top four. So it's been a need. And of course, it's got the multi-level. I mean, it's a beautiful building, but it's
a lot of levels.
Real problem when you have ice buildup and water and snow and all those things. So, yes, we have sustained damage to multiple areas. Most of it honestly became an issue with the huge ice loads that even some of them were falling off from certain peaks. And once they finally came down, I mean, they sounded like a car hitting the building. They were so huge. And so there's been damage on the front of the building near the library. There's been damage on the backside. The band is actually practicing in the auditorium right now because there were some substantial leaks in there. And actually, they did some work on that band room over Christmas already because it was leaking. And it has had leaks. So they had already had a snowblower up there at one point and trying to clear that off and, you know, take care of it. So yeah, a few of those huge, like stalactite, monstrous ice, they damaged the roof. Yeah, so.
Wow, that, I guess to replace, I mean, that's such a huge, expensive project.
It's big. So, yep, so the adjuster's here and they're going around and checking it all out and seeing what mitigation efforts had already gone in. We keep talking mitigation everywhere, but definitely, you know, they want to see those things. They want to know what kinds of things you did as a precursor, you know, to the damage happening. And we certainly had lots of photo proof of everything that was being done to clear and take care of, you know, the buildings the best that we could in anticipation of what was coming and freezing and thawing and roof drains.
I think a lot of people were affected. We had a 4x4 here on our little porch, you know, got a little crack in it.
Exactly.
I mean, there were a lot of chainsaws
out.
Yeah, exactly. So the buildings, the middle school and high school, those are like 60s, 70s? I mean, that's how old they are?
The high school finished in 86.
Oh, 86. Okay.
Yes. And mm-hmm. then they tore down the middle school and started all over again right after that.
Okay.
So it was being built when I was in eighth grade. So then we were spread out. We actually were in the old high school where mm-hmm. the middle school sits now. And we would walk outside and go over to go to classes in the new building, which is actually the black building, and while they built that. So 86 was the year we moved into the high school. So it's been since at least then, unless there's been a re-roofing between then, which I would be really, yikes.
Yeah, lots of patching.
Still, yeah, my previous life was commercial property management. So I'm like, 86, roof from 86, that's a long time. Mm-hmm. And then the middle school was like, they broke ground the next year once we all moved over so that they had room for it. So I think it finished, my younger sister went to middle school there. So that would have been finished in 88 maybe.
Yes.
So it's an old roof too. You know?
And actually this area with the, they call it the black box right here where the mm-hmm. gym is and all that, that's actually more like 75.
Yeah,
like
that's where I'm thinking gym those are the 70s. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it was here in 1980 when we moved here.
Yes.
The black box.
So the gym roof is 70s, mm-hmm. but then the middle and high school is like mid 80s. Mm-hmm.
Everything's mm-hmm. pretty old over there.
Still, we're talking like 35, 40 years.
Which is the length of life we mm-hmm. usually got out of commercial buildings in Seattle, which was between 30 and 40 years if we were lucky.
Yeah.
So if you had your druthers with seeing that you said it was on the top of your capital list in the boroughs, I mean, are you looking at like roof replacement as a solution?
I think that there are several sections that will come out of this through the insurance process that will be replaced that will be under this kind of snow and ice issue. And so I don't know that the whole thing will get replaced at this point, but I think I do feel fairly confident that we'll have some work that will come out of this that will be able to be done with some of those certain sections that were very damaged, like above the band room, above the library, you know, some of those larger flat areas that sustained, you know, damage from the snow load. So,
all right.
yeah.
All right, we'll stay tuned for that. And then looks like earlier release for the secondary schools starting now, right? Mm-hmm. That's on Friday. We mentioned that on air. So looks like an earlier 12/15 release. Is that a done deal? Or
yeah. Okay. Yep. We're going to go ahead and do that and align. The elementary's been doing that since the beginning of the year. They've had a Friday noon release. Midland High School actually proposed it last spring and even into the fall, just trying to see if we could get enough, you know, look at the minutes, total minutes per week and all of that. They were very interested in it. They had felt that it was very successful last year when they had the early release on the Friday. They would do intervention work with kids. They would keep, you know, kids after on that Friday and have some good opportunities to have, you know, one-on-one time with teachers, that kind of thing, or small group, you know, instruction, or if they were behind for some reason. So they were very interested in that originally. I was concerned about the number of minutes. It was making me a little nervous. And then there, and just, you know, just looking at the overall picture, I feel comfortable and confident where we are with our minutes. And I also feel that it is a need, especially with these in-service days that we're removing. We need those Fridays for grade level collaboration and time to talk about what kids need, focus on that. Again, nice to talk about teaching and learning maybe on those Fridays.
Okay. Yeah. So that's a few hours on the Friday where students, if they need to make up work or something, there's probably some students out there who are missing.
Yeah.
With quarantines and whatnot, you know,
exactly.
Having makeup work that they
yes, and need that's to do. Something we've seen, and just, you know, I do think kids, some kids are really just needing a little bit more support and help. I mean, that it is what's happening. There, people are being impacted, whether it's through travel or you know, positive cases or quarantines or, you know, sickness, that kind of thing. So disruptions have certainly been something that have influenced us, and I do think it will be helpful for our kids to have a little bit of that extra support and maybe not, you know, from 3 to 4 every day or whatever. It could be a little bit earlier on those Fridays. And and I think we're going to run a bus. So appreciate our Stikine services, Kurt Birchall and Neil and Rebecca and our crew. We will do a release at 12 and 12:15. And then we are planning to run one extra bus at 1:45 in the afternoon. So that also helps if we have kids that may need to stay, you know, or parents or whatever, we would work that out. But there is a bus that we're going to have available on the Friday as well. So that could help.
That's great. So then students wouldn't need to find their own way if they needed moved out the road or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Okay. So I think that will be helpful. And we did find that last year. We did have that extra bus last year when the Midland High School was getting out at noon and the elementary was still going till, you know, like 1:30 on Fridays. We would have kids that would come over and want to ride that bus.
Mm-hmm. Catch it.
Yeah.
Well, looks like another thing on the agenda is talking about contracts for teachers. This would be tenured teachers. What does that look like for next year, 2023? What do you have a good idea now, I guess?
Yep. The list will be on there. We have a couple teachers who are being added to that list. I can't even say them now, but are new. My brain is losing it. Anyway, so yes, so we do know that we'll have a possibility of a few staff members who might be doing other things next year, and so getting these contracts out now is helpful. Just it's helpful for us for planning, and it also helps other people, you know, if they're looking for other jobs or that sort of thing. You know, depending life is out there, so it's definitely challenging to find staff. As we said, there's the sub issue, and then just wanting to find really good qualified staff. I think if we can know as soon as possible what positions we might have available or what that might look like, then we can have a really good chance of securing, you know, good applicants.
Yeah. And so this is end of January doing the tenured list. Mm-hmm. And then what's the deadline for, I mean, I guess you go into the summer for hiring.
We could, yes. So hopefully not. But okay. Yeah, so these, you know, we would know. They have 30 days to return them, so that, you know, we would have an idea of that. And then February, we would give out non-tenured contracts. So we would also know teachers that might be on that list and if they're making a decision to do something else.
Okay.
You know, that kind of thing. So yeah, we can start posting.
All right. Oh, and then there's more and more on the agenda. Just a budget revision, which I actually haven't looked at quite the details of that yet, but the finance director, Karen Morrison, will be presenting on the budget revision. Anything to add about that?
I do want to recognize her efforts, as we always do, just for the incredible work that she does keeping us on track. You know, I mean, even during all the, I mean, an example is when we were trying to work through things with all the snow and ice and trying to have people coming in and doing some work. And, you know, I mean, she just keeps everybody in line. You know, if we have a plan or we're posting something or we're trying to pay people, she just, she's so detail oriented and she really, she just does an amazing job. So just to, of course, recognize her efforts and, as always, and maximizing, you know, the funds that we do receive, you know. So we are looking, we did budget for 415 and we did end up coming in at 426, which is great.
That's student population.
Yep, that's our student numbers. And so that's helpful because that's, you know, we typically do more conservative budgeting. We always do that. But it's nice when it comes in.
It's quite a bit more.
Where you I want mean, it, you know, for sure. Definitely down from 470 of a couple of years ago, but certainly good that we're looking at that 426, which is also that kind of line on the 3-2 school issue that we've talked about before. So our student numbers there are looking good, and we've been, you know, good stewards of that and making use of our federal grants as we can for, you know, to help offset staffing costs, you know, able to maintain a couple of additional positions in the elementary school this year. And we may be reducing that number next year, but, you know, we had 14 classroom teachers over there, which was huge, helpful. For lots of reasons, not just COVID, but small class sizes are great.
Yeah, I really
like
that.
It'd be nice if we could keep that, but it's,
Yeah,
I was wondering how that, well, we'll see what happens, but it was nice last year when my daughter was in the grade school, and wow, such small class sizes, and...
Yeah, nice to have that, again, that extra attention with some of the disruptions and things that we have experienced. I think it really makes a difference, and the numbers look good for next year, too, though. They look very... evenly kind of dispersed, which is nice. You know, sometimes you have those classes that are like
huge,
50,
tiny.
And then you have one that's like 27, you know, or whatever. And so that makes staffing challenging, but the numbers are looking dispersed pretty well, I think, too. So that makes it nice.
So that extra money that comes from more students than you had budgeted for, does that just, is that, do you have a place for that yet, or is it going to go into savings?
It just goes right into the general operating budget, and we just use it to, pay staff, personnel costs, subs, you know, just goes right back into that same, and just helps us offset that whole, you know, whatever we're going to carry over. So, I mean, I think it just helps make that cushion a little stronger for us when we're, you know, when things continue to be unknown, you know, moving forward. So it's nice to have that, and so we're feeling like we're in a pretty good position that way.
All right.
Yeah.
How long is the meeting going to go tonight, Sarah?
Well, I think we have to vote after 2.5 hours if we wanted to make it a third, you know, another half hour.
Oh, okay.
Because I think there's, you know, that was probably made years ago. You hear some boards in the state that will go on and on and on for hours and hours, and I think no good decision is made if a meeting lasts too long. Because then you just get tired and you kind of throw up your hands. So I'm, you know, there's lots on the agenda other than mitigation, but, you know, well, probably if we have a lot of speakers, we'll just do what we did last time, hopefully, is just vote to specify a time if people really want to get up and talk. And, you know, I think I'd like to think my fellow board members got a good, robust conversation in our board work session so that we don't have to gnaw on it heavily tonight, and you know, we'll see.
Okay.
But yeah,
anything else you wanted to touch on before we go?
No, I do appreciate community feedback, even though I may, you know, me personally as a board member, look to the medical field for direction. I do appreciate hearing from parents with that have given ideas, and most specifically respectful letters that come in that recognize that we do this for free. And some of us have been on the board for a very long time. And it's easier to keep an open mind when ideas are given or they afford the same respect that we are affording them. So,
all right. Anything that you would like to add, Erica?
I don't think so. I feel like I've talked a lot, so I'm good.
Go do the building maintenance now.
I'm going to go talk about insurance and roof damage, okay. Yes.
All right. Well, that will do it for this edition of Campus Connection. Again, the regular school board meeting will be tonight at 6 at the high school library, also over Ring Central Video Conference. To participate in the meeting, people can get a passcode. And you can get that information from the school district office. Give them an email or a call over there. And KFSK will be recording the meeting, and we will be posting that online later on.